Frankenstein by Mary Shelley. To Mrs. Saville, England, St. Petersburg, December the 11th. You will rejoice to hear that no disaster has accompanied the commencement of an enterprise which you have regarded with such evil forebodings. I arrived here yesterday, and my first task is to assure my dear sister of my welfare and increasing confidence in the success of my undertaking. I am already far north of London, and I feel a cold northern breeze play upon my cheeks. This breeze, which has travelled from the regions towards which I am advancing, gives me a foretaste of those icy climes. There, Margaret, the sun is forever visible, its broad disk just skirting the horizon and diffusing a perpetual splendour. What may not be expected in a country of eternal light? This expedition has been the favourite dream of my early years. I have read with ardour the accounts of the various voyages which have been made in the prospect of arriving at the North Pacific Ocean through the seas which surround the pole. My education was neglected, yet these volumes were my study day and night. 6 years have passed since I resolved on my present undertaking. I can even now remember the hour from which I dedicated myself to this great enterprise. I commenced by inuring my body to hardship. I voluntarily endured cold, famine, thirst, and want of sleep. And now, Margaret, do I not deserve to accomplish some great purpose? This is the most favourable period for travelling in Russia. They fly quickly over the snow in their sledges. The cold is not excessive if you are wrapped in furs, a dress which I have already adopted. I shall depart for Archangel in a fortnight or 3 weeks, and my intention is to hire a ship there. I do not intend to sail until the month of June. And when shall I return? Ah, dear sister, how can I answer this? If I succeed, many, many months, perhaps years, will pass before you and I may meet. If I fail, you will see me again soon, or never. Farewell, my dear, excellent Margaret. Heaven shower down blessings on you, and save me, that I may again and again testify my gratitude for all your love and kindness. Your affectionate brother, R. Walton. To Mrs. Saville, England, Archangel, 28th March. How slowly the time passes here, encompassed as I am by frost and snow. Yet a second step is taken towards my enterprise. I have hired a vessel and am occupied in collecting my sailors. But I have one want which I have never yet been able to satisfy, and the absence of the object of which I now feel is a most severe evil. I have no friend, Margaret. I desire the company of a man who could sympathize with me. I have no one near me, gentle yet courageous, possessed of a cultivated as well as of a capacious mind, whose tastes are like my own, to approve or amend my plans. But this is a useless complaint. I shall certainly find no friend on the wide ocean, nor even here in Archangel among merchants and seamen. Yet some feelings beat even in these rugged bosoms. I cannot describe to you my sensations on the near prospect of my undertaking. I am going to unexplored regions, to the land of mist and snow, but I shall kill no albatross, therefore do not be alarmed for my safety, or if I should come back to you as worn and woeful as the ancient mariner. Shall I meet you again, after having traversed immense seas? I cannot expect success, yet I cannot bear to look on the reverse of the picture. Continue for the present to write to me by every opportunity. I may receive your letters on some occasions when I need them most to support my spirits. Remember me with affection, should you never hear from me again. Your affectionate brother, Robert Walton. To Mrs. Saville, England, July 7th. My dear sister, I write a few lines in haste to say that I am safe and well advanced on my voyage. This letter will reach England by a merchantman now on its homeward voyage from Archangel. Although I may not see my native land for many years, I am in good spirits. We have already reached a very high latitude, but it is the height of summer, and although not so warm as in England, the southern gales, which blow us speedily towards those shores which I so ardently desire to attain, breathe a degree of renovating warmth which I had not expected. Adieu, my dear Margaret. Be assured that for my sake, as well as yours, I will not rashly encounter danger. But success shall crown my endeavours. Wherefore not? What can stop the determined heart and resolved will of man? My swelling heart involuntarily pours itself out thus, but I must finish. Heaven bless my beloved sister, R.W. To Mrs. Saville, England, August 5th. So strange an accident has happened to us that I cannot forbear recording it, although it is very probable that you will see me before these papers can come into your possession. Last Monday, July 31st, we were nearly surrounded by ice. Our situation was somewhat dangerous, especially as we were compassed round by a very thick fog. We accordingly lay to. About 2 o'clock the mist cleared away, and we beheld, stretched out in every direction, vast and irregular plains of ice, which seemed to have no end. Some of my comrades groaned, and my own mind began to grow watchful with anxious thoughts, when a strange sight suddenly attracted our attention. We perceived a low carriage, fixed on a sledge and drawn by dogs, pass on towards the north, at the distance of half a mile. A being, which had the shape of a man, but apparently of gigantic stature, sat in the sledge and guided the dogs. We watched with our telescopes until the traveller was lost to us. The appearance excited our unqualified wonder. We were, as we believed, many hundred miles from any land, but this apparition seemed to denote that it was not, in reality, so distant as we supposed. Shut in by ice, however, it was impossible to follow his track. About 2 hours after this, we heard the ground sea, and before the night we were free. We, however, lay to until the morning, fearing to encounter in the dark those large, loose masses which float about after the breaking up of the ice. In the morning, however, as soon as it was light, I went upon the deck and found all the sailors busy on one side of the vessel, apparently talking to someone in the sea. It was, in fact, a sledge which had drifted towards us in the night on a large fragment of ice. Only one dog remained alive, but there was a human being within it, whom the sailors were persuading to enter the vessel. He was not, as the other traveller appeared to be, a savage inhabitant of some undiscovered island, but a European. On perceiving me, the stranger addressed me in English, although with a foreign accent. "Before I come on board your vessel," said he, "will you have the kindness to inform me whither you are bound?" You may conceive my astonishment on hearing such a question addressed to me from a man on the brink of destruction. I replied, however, that we were on a voyage of discovery towards the northern pole. Upon hearing this, he appeared satisfied and consented to come on board. I never saw a man in so wretched a condition. We attempted to carry him into the cabin, but as soon as he had quitted the fresh air, he fainted. We accordingly restored him suitably, and as soon as he showed signs of life, we wrapped him in blankets, and by slow degrees he recovered and ate a little soup, which restored him wonderfully. 2 days passed in this manner before he was able to speak. When he had in some measure recovered, I removed him to my own cabin. I never saw a more interesting creature. His eyes have generally an expression of wildness, but there are moments when, if anyone performs an act of kindness to him, his whole countenance is lighted up, but he is generally melancholy and despairing. When my guest was a little recovered, I had great trouble to keep off the men who wished to ask him 1,000 questions. Once, however, the lieutenant asked why he had come so far on so strange a vehicle. His countenance instantly assumed an aspect of the deepest gloom. "To seek one who fled from me." "And did the man whom you pursue travel in the same fashion?"
"Yes."
"Then I fancy we have seen him. For the day before we picked you up, we saw some dogs drawing a sledge, with a man in it, across the ice." This aroused the stranger's attention, and he asked a multitude of questions. When alone with me, he inquired if I thought that the breaking up of the ice had destroyed the other sledge. I replied that I could not answer with any degree of certainty. From this time, a new spirit of life animated the decaying frame of the stranger. He manifests the greatest eagerness to be on deck to look for the sledge which had before appeared. But he is too weak, and I have promised that someone should watch for him. Such is my journal of what relates to this strange occurrence up to the present day. The stranger has gradually improved in health, but is very silent. For my own part, I begin to love him as a brother. He must have been a noble creature in his better days. I said in one of my letters, my dear Margaret, that I should find no friend on the wide ocean. Yet I have found a man who, before his spirit had been broken by misery, I should have been happy to have possessed as a brother of the heart. I shall continue my journal, should I have any fresh incidents to record. August 13th. My affection for my guest increases every day. He is now much recovered from his illness and is continually on the deck. Yet although unhappy, he is not so utterly occupied by his own misery, but that he interests himself deeply in the projects of others. He has frequently conversed with me on mine, which I have communicated to him without disguise. I was easily led by the sympathy which he evinced to use the language of my heart, and to say with all the fervour that warmed me how gladly I would sacrifice my fortune, my existence, my every hope to the furtherance of my enterprise. One man's life or death were but a small price to pay for the acquirement of the knowledge which I sought, for the dominion I should acquire and transmit over the elemental foes of our race. At first I perceived that he tried to suppress his emotion. He placed his hands before his eyes, and tears began to trickle fast from between his fingers, but at length he spoke in broken accents.
Unhappy man, do you share my madness? Have you drunk also of the intoxicating draught? Hear me, let me reveal my tale, and you will dash the cup from your lips.
Such words, you may imagine, strongly excited my curiosity, but the paroxysm of grief that had seized the stranger overcame his weakened powers, and many hours of repose and tranquil conversation were necessary to restore his composure. Having conquered the violence of his feelings, he then led me again to converse and asked me particularly the history of my earlier years. The tale was quickly told, so I further spoke of my desire of finding a friend and expressed my conviction that a man could boast of little happiness who did not enjoy this blessing.
I agree with you, replied the stranger. We are unfashioned creatures, but half made up if one dearer than ourselves do not lend his aid to perfectionate our weak and faulty natures. You have hope and the world before you, and have no cause for despair. I once had a friend, the most noble of human creatures, but I have now lost everything, and cannot begin life anew.
And at this, his countenance became expressive of a calm, settled grief, and presently he retired to his cabin. Will you smile at the enthusiasm I express concerning this divine wanderer? Sometimes I have endeavoured to discover what quality it is which he possesses that elevates him so immeasurably above any other person I ever knew. I believe it is an intuitive discernment, a quick but never failing power of judgment, a penetration into the causes of things, unequalled for clearness and precision. Add to this a facility of expression and a voice whose varied intonations are soul-subduing music.